the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
The biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's dancing behind movie scenes, behind the movie scenes. Sadie Rani, she's the one that keeps the dream alive. From the morning past the evening to the end of the life. Brian Poole, Asher on the 45, well it's Brian Poole, Asher on the 45. Brian Poole, Asher on the 45. Well it's a Brian Poole, Asher on the 45.
And we're back at the races, and 20 minutes to the top of the hour. Actually, trying to scare up Bill, we may have to flip-flop around a little bit. And in fact, you know, we could maybe do, Jolene, is let's maybe, let me try giving you this perhaps while I tap dance for a minute. And let me see if, our man can move up and flip them around. We'll see if that gets a productive response. Going to give you this number maybe to try. And meanwhile, I want to catch up on a couple of other of the weekend results. And here, give you this, baby. Let's see if this works. I sent a simultaneous text about maybe coming on now, and we'll see if we can pull that off. I've also got a couple of other things, Joe, that we could perhaps work. You know, yesterday, was it yesterday on air that I asked that question of about the five triple-digit buyers, a three-year-old? And I sent the note to Andy Beyer, and the answer, I think, is American Pharoah. As far as I can tell, in the recent past, Andy didn't get back to me yet, but I got a feeling that that's the right answer, that the last three-year-old to post, and he did, he posted eight in a row. But Maximum Security and the five numbers, the five triple-digit numbers that he's posted, that looks to be the last time. Let me try this then, Joe. Give you that instead. And well, at this point, we can almost just go to 11, and we'll see if we get Sean. See if we get Sean Clancy on the back end this morning. I wanted Sean to talk also about the. You know, the heat, like we did a little bit with Dick. So there we go. All right, here's a couple of other. That's fine. We can catch up on a few other results that hadn't had a chance to discuss. I did mention in passing that Dale Romans had made a clever move with Seven Trumpets. That good Lord, 88 buyer for Seven Trumpets, so found a very workable spot. And in addition, a couple of other stakes that we're not going to have a. I don't think we're going to get a chance to talk to a few. You know, of the smaller stake results, that Daisy Cutter, I mentioned in passing that Peter Miller had won the Daisy Cutter on Saturday. And that, of course, came up with Phil D'Amato, with Phil finishing second and third. And he sounded very confident about the filly and the mare coming out of there, S.Y. Sky and Just Green. That was fun to catch up yesterday with Phil and keep tabs on those 3 year olds. Also from going all the way back, not that far, but going back to Friday, which we didn't discuss, but you did have the other two. You know, those two restricted stakes, the Oceanitas on Friday and Peter Urton. Yeah, Ahimsa, right? Yeah, Ahimsa. Goes favored with Brice Blanc and Wires. Three Great Sons. Takes the Oceanitas, and one thing I have not had a chance really to do yet is kind of catch up on all the maiden races, particularly the two-year-olds in California. They've been running. I have seen quite a few of the older maiden variety races, but I haven't really, you know, when you're traveling like that and what went on, particularly on Saturday. didn't get a chance to review. You know, for instance, you had a couple of that Pure Xena, the Warriors reward for Brian Corner and Samantha Siegel. That was one of the two-year-old winners. That was Saturday. What else? Who else caught our eye? We mentioned in that conversation with Tim Yakteen and the George Krikorian success. He also won with Steve Sherman, the Fleet Treat. That was on Thursday. Hollywood Hills. Coming down from Golden Gate. And a nice price. And beat, you know, beat the 1-9 favorite. Sneaking out. Which Keith DeSormo saddled. And had been a, you know, horse out of the Hollendorfer camp. But Hollywood Hills, last to first under Flavian Pratt and up by a nose at almost 9-1. So a very nice start to the Del Mar season for George Krikorian on the owner's side. That was on Thursday. And just mentioned, of course, we had the conversation about Bowie's Hero. 2-year-old Collusion Illusion, a Twirling Candy. This for Mark Glatt. And a host of owners, Agnew, Orr, Schneider, Zitko. Twirling Candy colt out of a First Dude mare, bred by Don Disney. And this was a whole field of first-time starters, just six two-year-olds. But, you know, Doug O'Neill had that defense wins in there. That was a horse that Doug O'Neill had mentioned when we reviewed his two-year-old camp. Collusion Illusion, a $300,000 purchase at OBS April for that group of partners. And very nice that Mark Glatt, who, you know, we had those conversations with over the winter, and Mark, very outspoken, very smart, and Glatt, nice to see him get, you know, chances with $300,000 two-year-olds. That's a positive development for sure. And you know, everything else we talked about, right? We Bowie's Hero, Bombard for Richard Mandela, the Warfront winning the Wicker, and boy, Flavian Pratt, what a opening week at Saratoga at Del Mar. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stakes, 5 stake wins. Out of what they run, 8. He won 5 of the 8 stakes, and Rosario came in, and obviously in Catalina Cruiser's win in the San Diego, prepping for the Pacific Classic, and then Brice Blanc, the only other success from the stakes, stakes calendar. Stakes pick up, of course, tomorrow at Del Mar with the Cougar 2. And they've got 7 horse field to go the mile and a half on the Cougar. It's in the post and campaign for Sadler and Woodford. Baltus and the Abadanza team send out Morse code. Who else? Mark Glatt. Zestful. Field of 7 for the Cougar. And over on our side of the country, the Honorable Miss. 6-pack there of nice sprinters. This prepping, of course, these are the fillies and mares, and they're prepping for the Ballerina, Pacific Gale, John Kimmel, Shalon for Arno Delacour, Javier Castellano, boy, Honey Bunny in here. for the Hootie team, John Ortiz. Mia Mischief, Steve Asmussen, and Santana, the Howling Brats, and looks like Sal Cuban involved with the Mattaquette moniker. The Hyder family is also partnered up. Minute to Stardom, Camejo, and Cintron coming up from Mid-Atlantic, and Hours to Run. Involved. And where's my, do I, let me do that. I'm curious about the, I know the Del Mar odds aren't out yet, but we can certainly pull up the Saratoga odds. I'm curious. Let's see. Del Mar's does not have them up yet. And they're always West Coast, always a little behind when it comes to getting out the odds, but Larry Jones, Hours to Run, 7-2. They made Mia Mischief the 7-5 favorite, 5-2 on Chelan, and 9-2 on Pacific Gale. So this, you know, it's one thing that's been unusual. These stake fields that have been a little bit smaller than you'd really want, and obviously the Lake George was, even though he ended up with the longest price winning the Lake George, but these have been very tricky for the most part, and that includes the way the Shoe V. I mean, I was pleased to zero in on Golden Ticket, and you got $8 and more. So even though that, you know, was a fairly, you know, narrow group, it was well matched. And the same thing, I think, is on tap here tomorrow. I look forward to Andy talking about this. Yeah, I mean, Mia Mischief doesn't lay over this group, not by any stretch. And pace-wise, taking a look, you know, pace-wise, she's a little forward. You would think that Minute to Stardom is going to want to go. She's had the lead in virtually, you know, certainly most recently, and once the spring summer rolled around. This is for Miss Evelyn, Britlin Stables, Minute to Stardom, the Louisiana bred Star Guitar filly. This is a nice group. This will be good. This I'm curious what Andy's going to do in here. Good card. In fact, the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, if you haven't had a chance to really look through, it's a very nice week of racing. And you would think that the Saturday cancellation, or really technically the Sunday, I mean, the Saturday card got run in its entirety. And the Sunday card, those races that were in the book and the extras, those will be, you know, fed into other races. So it should positively influence field size, you know, going forward here the next week to 10 days. So even though we lost a day of racing Saturday, it actually enhances things going forward. We're going to head forward toward the top of the hour. Andy Serling going to join us. We'll get expanded Saratoga commentary from Andy and more. We'll see. We're going to have to push Bill Downs back after Andy. All right. Back after this, Andy Serling.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't stop shaking. The room has a groove and the floor is almost earthquaking. Look what we're making. History out on the floor and it's just awakening.
We're back at the races just a little before the top of hour three. Happy to get a chance to talk to Andy Serling, the New York Racing Association, Saratoga in nearly full swing. A little bit of a heat hiccup on Saturday, obviously. But, boy, it made for a phenomenal Sunday of racing. Andy, good morning.
Morning. You know, the show came up at dinner the other night, and I'm not going to share who the participants of the dinner were. And I didn't bring it up. This was really not generated by me at all. But the discussion of the music came up. As you know, the music is one of my favorite topics.
Yes.
And it was said, before I said a word, that perhaps you play that intro song more than a little too long. Now, I'm going to say that that was pretty good for you. That was only 20 seconds, the intro today. It's been longer. And I know you know this is a pet peeve of mine. So I just want you to know that I'm not the only one that thinks you're insane.
Well, there's widespread acclamation on that topic. Let's be fair.
And I'm going to tell you, there were some titans of the industry at this dinner. Not, you know, myself not included, but really, really important team members of the racing community.
Well, you know, at the same time, I think that there's a balance. There's plenty of people that, you know, their favorite song comes on and, you know, they...
Their favorite song? Let me ask you a question. How many of your listeners' favorite song has ever come on?
Oh, there's got to be, because there's favorite songs of mine.
So therefore, you're representative of the musical tastes of your listeners?
I'm going to say yes.
You may be representative of reasonably good musical taste, but I'm going to say that's not necessarily the same as your listeners.
You know, it's eclectic. I know that, for instance, Nick wants to know, Zito wants to know why I don't play any Dean Martin or
there
Sinatra.
You go. There you go.
It's tough. It's hard.
You have a lot of a Dean Martin Sinatra crowd coming on your show. And they're not represented at all, Steve, in any manner whatsoever.
I don't think it's unfair. The thing is, if I'm going to go in that direction, I'm going to throw the curveball and deliver, you know, some Bobby Darin and Louis Prima instead.
Louis Prima. What do you think of when you say Louis Prima?
I think of Big Night.
I think of Big Night and Stanley Tucci. Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we should have Stanley on. Talk about Louis Prima and his experiences in Saratoga. Stanley used to come to Saratoga all the time.
You know, you've said that to me, and you've mentioned that Stanley used to be a regular.
Not at the track. Maybe his only appearance at the track was Billy Backgate. Was he in the racetrack scene, Billy Backgate? I know Steve Buscemi was.
Buscemi, definitely. Boy, we got to pull it out. We should remind people. In fact, you know, with Mary Lou's passing, Andy, there's been a couple of references to, you know, the movies made in Saratoga, and Billy Bathgate was omitted from some of those. That's a crime.
It is a crime. I mean, there's a lot of Saratoga. The Gideon, right? Yep. There's scenes in the Gideon. There's probably some terrific stuff on the track. One of my classmates, I believe, is one of the jockeys in that movie, Nick Vero. Who I see around occasionally. Yeah. Nick was a jockey briefly, and he's, I believe, one of the jockeys in the race, or in the paddock when they're coming out.
Well, still...
Saratoga never looked finer in the fall. It's kind of like Seabiscuit.
That's
well,
right. That's right.
Filmed even a little later in the fall in Saratoga.
It was late. It was like October. It was cold, they say.
I want to say that there's also a scene in Seabiscuit when the owner of War Admiral is coming out of a building. They're asking about the match, and I think that's filmed in the steps of the Canfield Casino.
Ooh, I'll have to. I didn't realize that, but I'll have to. You know, it's funny you bring that up because I can remember being at the ball at the Canfield with awaiting Mary Lou's arrival.
Were you invited?
No, I was invited actually.
So we found the one mistake that Mary Lou made in her entire time in Saratoga. Here we thought she was perfect.
Almost. Yeah. Do you have a Mary Lou? Do you want to throw
Mary Lou? I mean, and you know, personally, I mean, like so many, I think that genuinely, Mary Lou was a rare figure. I think that got accolades and was sort of revered and popular in across a wide variety of people and where it was legitimate. You know, a lot of times you hear a lot of stories and you hear them, you're rolling your eyes, going, "If they only knew!" Right? It just wasn't true with Mary Lou. Mary Lou was really genuinely a real figure, you know, a larger-than-life figure, but somebody who really cared about Saratoga and did a lot of really great things for this town, both openly and probably behind the scenes, too. But it is true. I mean, she is somebody who really convinced the socialites to come back to Saratoga when Saratoga was kind of dying in the 50s and 60s.
Yep.
But she was popular across a wide strata. And it's not like you've heard people say, "Oh, if you knew the real story." You know, you just didn't hear that with her. Everybody was just very popular with people, and for good reason. I can't think of anything not good, honestly, to say. I mean, listen, I started a dead show at SPAC once. Says it all.
How about that?
Yeah.
That's
Mary Lou,
great.
Mary Lou loved Saratoga and did a great deal for the town. And, you know, her legacy will live on, which is, I think, all that people can ask for in life, in a very positive way. But, you know, she had a very, very great life. The Times obituary was terrific. I don't know if you saw the New York Times obituary, but it was really good.
There's been so many.
That's the one I read, and it just covered a lot of ground and told stories. It was terrific. It really was.
And well, I said it to Michael Veach, I think. Every obit that I'm reading, and I'll get to the Times, the Post and some of the local ones and the one that Nicole Russo did in DRF, every single one you read, you find something new about her that you didn't know. I didn't know that she was involved in luring the Olympics back to Lake Placid.
I didn't either, but that's not surprising.
How about that?
It's not surprising. None of it's surprising. I mean, seriously, I mean, not in a very good way. Yeah. No. She was a huge figure in Saratoga.
Yeah, an outsized figure. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
In a good way. In a genuinely good way. And I think that's rare. It's rare. She really was.
Yep. Well, and I also, the subject that you appreciate and you brought up yourself earlier this spring or late winter, about what a steward, stewardship and, you know, her desire to improve every aspect of the sport that she touched upon, whether it was the involvement in the museum, whether it was resurrecting the breeding operation and the racing operation of the Eaton blue and brown, whether it was, you know, every part of the game, she tried to improve and have a positive influence.
Have you had Nick on to talk about her? Nick,
yes, her. This morning.
Oh, good. Yeah, anyhow.
On to the
what
racing topic.
On,
well, I want you to
a
talk
day.
About
sitting on the porch.
Now it is after 24 hours straight of rain.
That was good. That was good.
It's good. It's good for the grass. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Very healthy to get a nice rain. Couldn't have been better timed being Monday.
No, that's for sure. Monday, Tuesday.
But somebody told me on Twitter they'll be off the turf on Wednesday. How do these people make it to the day? How do they make it to the day?
Well, if the turf gets some cut in it, it's certainly going to make
won't
it easier.
Won't be any cut. The turf will be fine. I don't think people understand how quickly grass, the ground sucks it up. So, please.
Well, and I'll start with an offbeat rather than, you know, the big graded stake conversation. The Caress and Momignou wiring that field
on
Sunday.
One guy went the lead while others strangled back, and it resulted in an upset. That's shocking. How many horses have to win races where there were prices in races by actually getting a somewhat aggressive ride while, you know, there's a clown show taking place behind them before people stop with this nonsense? It's like, you know, you take these races, and it's like there's three speeds on paper, and the only way there's ever any kind of pace is if two horses that weren't projected to be part of the pace get involved with one of the three, because you know that only one of the three is going. And I want to know what success ratio these people have had with their horses dragging them back off of inevitable slow paces. I love that strangle, strangle, strangle. And then when you ask your horse the 3/8 to 5/16 pull, the horse is dead empty. Gee, I wonder why that is. It just happens over and over again. I mean, listen, I'm a fan of Tyler Gaffalione. I think he's great. I think he's going to have a huge career. He's doing well. But obviously, you know, that was one he'd like to have back on Mortician. I'm sure Rusty Arnold is, you know, enjoying a terrific run for him, for anybody, really, was frustrated. You know, it's like,
yeah,
but it happens, you know. And even Dylan, who was riding the two in that race, probably run, you know, sense the pace isn't developing. And don't just have your automatic reaction be to take back. Like, extend a little bit, and at least if, you know, you go a little forward, maybe it stretches the race out a little bit and makes your job easier. It's just an endless. I mean, even Mott commented on it in a post-race to Maggie when he won with who's the horse that won the whatever race it was, who could remember, that turf mile race or mile 16th race, where Rapp, you know, got completely screwed by the slow pace, and there were three expected speeds in the paper, and they're just walking around the front end. And even Bott said, like, even though there's a lot of speed on paper, you know, something the effect of, even though there's a lot of speed on paper, we know that doesn't happen, so, you know, we had to get position. And I think Junior wrote him. He said Junior did a great job of getting position because, you know, even though there was supposed to be speed, you know there's never speed. And, you know, we were having a discussion in the show, Tom and Gary and I, and you know, rightfully so, Gary and Tom were saying, oh, it's going to be a fast pace in here, and they were, you know, as any sensible person would be. And I said, well, guys, you know, being that I spend, you know, every, you know, 365 days a year in New York and over 200 days in the racetrack and watching this crap happen, I don't think there's, I agree with you on paper, there's supposed to be a pace, but there's not going to be because I'll just believe when I see it. There's so much is, and you know, and Tom was laughing after the race about it. But it's true. It's just, you know, you just over and over and over again. And I understand races aren't run on paper, but
I just want to know to what benefit. Let me ask you a question. Was it to the benefit of the Julie horse? What's her in the Shoe V? Was it a benefit to her that he just strangled her down and let Mott sit so easily on her? It's a Julie. Just go. You know, go a little faster. Was it good for Garana that she went the super slow pace and turned into a sprint to the wire? Or does it actually act to her detriment? Use your speed as a weapon, the way a Complexity did in the Champagne last year, and every horse that was chasing them basically blew a tire. Like, use your speed as a weapon.
Well, and that's what I agree. No argument. You have pointed this out earlier and more with more strenuously than anybody. And you know who's terrific at it is Luis Saez. Luis Saez goes out and he gets out setting a pace, and then he accelerates going into a turn, and everybody's right. All of a sudden panic stricken, and their horses are got their heart in their mouth, and Louis rifles away. I love it.
This was
I love how he
that, that the Mick was great at in his career. You know, understanding pace and doing things like that. And listen, I don't want to blame the jockeys, to be honest with you. I blame the trainers as much, if not more. I do. I think that they're afraid of speed. I just think the game has changed to a point, and a lot of it. And I think was Nick talking about it, or somebody, or my friend Craig Murkowski was talking about it. I think Craig was saying it, that a lot of it, and I totally agree, is because of how much turf racing we run. It's almost like we've forgotten that turf and dirt are two different animals. That there's an understanding that, you know, speed on the turf is much different than speed in the dirt. That it doesn't, you know, a big pace advantage in the turf isn't necessarily that strong an advantage in the turf in the way it is on the dirt. And it's like we seem to ride all races the same. And dirt is a very speed-friendly type of racing. And we've gotten away from it. And it's just completely changed things. And maybe it all started with the synthetics, you know, and the ridiculous nature of racing on synthetics. It sort of perverted everything. But it's very frustrating because, you know, one of the keys to being successful, having ability to be somewhat successful in handicapping, is to have some kind of ability to see how a race is going to be run. And honest to God, that's just gone out the window.
Yeah, it makes it hard. Makes it very, very hard.
Yeah, it's just gone out the window.
Yep.
It's a theoretically good way to handicap, but it's just no longer good in practice.
Yeah. It shows up in, I mean, that race, for instance, I mean, I thought Halliday, and it actually, it was a weird thing going on, too, because Roy Halliday was being inducted in the Hall of Fame virtually at the same time the race was being run, and there was this weird
really
harmony.
Cool.
Yeah.
He was disappointing, because he's actually the one that got a semi-aggressive ride, was at least on top of the pace. He was a sort of mediocre second there. I thought he would be better off his maiden, and I wouldn't give up on him, and obviously he didn't run badly, but he could have run a little better. I bet Wrapped, and obviously I'm annoyed because I made the right bet at 10-1, and I think he probably ran the best race of anybody in there. But, you know, it's like I bet on Riendo, who won the 12th race. And it's like, how much the best do you have to be to win a bet? I mean, he won by a head, and, you know, he was caught dead last behind a super crawling pace, and he ran, you know, a remarkable race to win.
Yep,
and Rick Schossberg's having a real resurgence lately. I like to see that. I like Rick, and
he's terrific.
I like Rick's a good trainer. It's nice to see him doing well. Of course, Rick is so instrumental in aftercare as well. Do you have him on the show to talk about aftercare?
We haven't actually.
Get him on.
It's been my pleasure. Absolutely, one of my favorites. And of course, his son worked for us at the barbecue. And
I didn't know that.
Sure, absolutely.
Really,
absolutely.
He survived,
everybody. Yeah, yeah.
Did he come away relatively unscathed?
He's graduated from college just this past spring, so he's
in spite of his. You know, I saw you for the first time at the track from afar. I saw you on might have been Sunday. I think I saw you from afar. First time I've seen you at the track. I think this entire meet.
No, of course not. I was away.
You have a lot going on. I mean, there's a lot of social stuff going on in Greenwich.
Well, you know that. Well, I wasn't here. I was in Monmouth Thursday and Friday.
How'd that go?
Thursday and Friday went great. Saturday, we kind of blew the turn. Saturday. What was your, before we talk more, since it came up, before we talk more, you know, more Saratoga action, what was your take on the Haskell?
No, I don't really have a big one. Maximum Security certain continues to sort of run the same quality race every time he runs. I don't know that beating Mucho Gusto at a mile and eighth is something that's going to be a resume builder, but he ran fine. He's a nice horse. He seems to show up every time. I mean, he's been consistent. I probably shouldn't. He couldn't have come down because you can't even tell what happened because of where it happened. But clearly something did happen, and I think for John Velasquez to be as pissed as he was, that's not in John's nature. You know, he's, you think about his career, he's a roll with a guy, and, you know, he sort of understands, you know, the game. And if he felt like, yeah, you know, I was probably putting a little tight, but I was completely out of horse, he'd be like, yeah, you know, I was dead empty anyway, and I think he'd be the guy to admit it. And to see him that annoyed does make me feel as though something happened. And it's not as though he was forcing his way in. He had the position. That was his position, you know. It's not like he was trying to get into a hole that wasn't there. So I imagine something did happen. I mean, the stewards couldn't really do anything about it because they just didn't have the angles. But I do think having an inquiry for about 11 seconds, that wasn't in their the best interest of the game. Frankly, they would be better off just even pretending and looking at it for longer because it's not like there isn't a history, there isn't a story. And so I didn't think that was particularly well handled, but I don't think there's anything you could do because you can't, if something happened, you can't tell for from the films they had because of where it happened.
Right.
Listen, he's a good horse, and he's the leader of the division, I think, at this time. You know, but it's a division that's open to who wins the Travers. If he loses the Travers, that Travers winner is probably going to be the divisional leader. And if it's War of Will, it's certainly going to be a divisional leader. But, you know, right now, I guess he puts him forward, though I don't know that he's necessarily a significantly bigger divisional leader than War of Will, but he does have two great ones at this point. We'll see. I'm glad he's coming up to the Travers. I'm thrilled. And he's obviously a good horse to be reckoned with.
Well, and speaking of which, I mean, I started the show kind of reviewing where we stand after that Curlin came up as deep as it did, and then the Jim Dandy's going to be drawn tomorrow, and that's going to be a crackerjack. Then you're all going to shuffle the deck, and they're all going to line up at the end of August.
Right.
It should be unbelievable.
No, it'll be terrific, and it's what it's supposed to be, right? And the race is supposed to be set on the racetrack. I still think that game winner, I mean, it's funny that Gary West may have the 3-year-old champion, but it may not be Maximum Security. It might be game winner. And I still believe that Tassis has every right to be the best 3-year-old in this group. We'll see what he does on Saturday, and obviously going to Travers. It's not like he's run a bad race. He's been the unlucky horse in this group, and game winner is a little unlucky too in the Derby, but I think Tassis has been the unlucky horse, but at some point he has to win, you know. But I remember even after, let me go back a long way, but I remember in 83, after the Travers, when Slew Gold once again ran second, I remember saying to a friend of mine, at some point, everything isn't going to keep going against Slew Gold, and he's going to start winning these races. And obviously, that happened in the fall. So, at some point, if in fact they really are good, and I believe Atastis is very good, they're not going to get unlucky. He's just going to win. You know, he's just going to win, and I think that's a real possibility that he wins both of these races in Saratoga. I'm not saying it's going to happen. You can't press that. But I believe that he is the likeliest to me, at least the group here, to come out of it. But so he's going to have to run, and if Max Majority keeps running the race he's running, he's going to have to run to beat him. It's not like Max Majority's lucking into wins. He's running consistently fast figures, and we said this after the Pegasus, the original Pegasus, that is. Let me say the real Pegasus. Well, I mean, they've been running the Pegasus for about 40 years, over 40 years, right, at the Meadowlands. but it's like people were saying, oh, he lost, this and that. And it's like, guys, he ran terrific. King for Day just ran a little better. But just because Max Fury lost that race, I didn't think he lost any luster at all. I think that's the problem with having these immediate reactions and sticking to them and being too result-oriented. Don't be result-oriented. Analyze the performance what it was. And it's like, here's another one for you. If King for Day hadn't been the race and he had won by 6 lengths and run a 1-on-1 buyer, he'd be saying, see, there's Maximum Security. He lost because the horse ran very well to beat him. That doesn't mean he ran badly, right? Tastis didn't run badly in the Belmonts because he was incredibly unlucky to lose, where he had this horrible trip, and the winner got the best ride and best trip of all. So the combination of factors, there's an argument Tastis was 5 or 6 lengths the best in the Belmont. And how would people be talking about him now? And that actually happened. And to ignore the trip, for whatever your own reasons are, whether it's out of some sort of just whatever it is just foolish. And to insist, if that horse was best, he would have won. You know, I love that comment after races. No, he was best, and circumstance led to him losing. And that's the nature of understanding trip handicapping, or not, or ignoring it. Go ahead, ignore it, but I don't. And over time, it matters.
Well, we'll look forward to Friday to this Curlin, and then Saturday, sometimes the Curlin comes up a little light, but not Friday.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Jim Dandy
Heart seems
looks
dangerous.
Great.
Looking at bikinis is obviously dangerous.
Yep.
I will see what Endorse does stretching out. I thought he was terrific last time, but he's going to have to take a step forward stretching out to win this race. But I think it's a perfect move by Kieran, and we talked about it a bit on the show last week, in that it's like, okay, if it turns out it wasn't the right move and he's not really a router, though his pedigree says he's supposed to love the distance, then they'll cut him back and run him in the Alan Jerkins.
Exactly.
A race he could absolutely win. So it's a perfect move by him. You know, it gives him those options. It's like, if it works out and he does really well, you try the Travers. If it doesn't, you cut him back for the Alan Jerkins. It's not a bad predicament to be in.
In addition, in that group, on Friday, Stanley Huff sends Global Campaign, who we're anxious to see, and what good timing.
The Jim Dandy.
And the Jim Dandy. What good timing, Andy. You're going to have Stanley on the show, and of course, he hate me the other day, and Scars Are Cool on Sunday. Stanley's hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah, I think Scars Are Cool got a 92 buyer, 93, 92.
I got it right here, actually.
Yeah, and I think that he hate me got like a 95 or 96 somewhere there. They really ran. Yeah, it's great to see him. It's great to see him back training and winning. It's no surprise he's winning. This guy's a winning trainer his entire career. A lot of people won't remember some of the horses he had, you know. Did he have Discreet Cat? He had Discreet Cat.
Yes. Yeah,
right?
all those discreetly. I mean, some went to Pletcher at a certain point. Discreetly Mine.
But Stanley also trained you and I when he was later sold to Edmund Gann, right? But he was Frankel, won the Met Mile. But Stan trained you and I when he began his career. You and I's maiden win was a giant win, and 122 and change, I want to say, at Belmont. He ran a big number first time out.
Now, Stanley with Tar Heel Mom at the end was one of my favorites.
I liked her, too.
And he had caller ID, didn't he?
Don't think so, but he might have.
Maybe,
I don't think so.
And you know, he had a good turf horse, too.
Half-iced. Run the Japan Cup.
And that's not who I was thinking of, but Request for Parole.
He wasn't quite half-iced.
Well, you're going to have Stanley on Thursday, and what a treat. Who else is on Thursday while we're on it?
Mike Maker. Mike Maker's on, and Gary Stevens. 3 first-time guests.
Nice. Oh, it'll be electric. It'll be crazy.
It'll be almost as incredible as it was when you were there. That was like having a Beatle the night you showed up. It was really like having a Beatle show. I mean, it was incredible.
Didn't you have it? Wasn't Andy on? He had Beyer that night too, I think.
He's not
right.
He's a has been.
He's a hack.
They were there to see you, right? A hack of the has been.
so ridiculous. How was the opening? You had standing room only. I heard Thursday.
We would have made room for you, Steve, if you'd show up.
Very kind. Well, I happen to have heard. I know you had Maggie, and I was invoked in the conversation.
You were? Oh, yeah. You were the person who recommended that I hire Maggie. Well, you didn't recommend I hire. You said, oh, absolutely, you should look at Maggie Wolfendale. So you were very pro-Maggie. You were the first person who mentioned her to me. Absolutely. And I remember when Dan Silver said, I've got a video from somebody. Do you want to look at it? And I said, who? And he said, Maggie Wolfendale. And I said, oh, Steve Pick told me I should look at her. So I do.
And in spite of that, she flourished.
Here she is.
She overcame the curse of Bic.
It makes
the job she's done even more impressive.
My track record's okay, actually, with
you're 1-0 with me.
There you go. One for one.
Listen to you again, but I like to keep it that way.
All right, I built up a big lead by bringing Maggie out.
No question about it. Yeah.
Speaking of big leads, Chad Brown starting to build up a big lead on the
he's
training title.
He's up 6-4.
Yeah, he'll start. He'll start padding it. Talk about Guarana and not everybody came away, you know, fully convinced about her stretching out.
Well, we are talking about a horse that's 3-3 that broke her maiden at 6.5 at Keeneland in late April, right? And has now won the Acorn and Coach and Club American Oaks in successive races. So, you know, let's not knock her too much. She's done a lot in a short period of time. Obviously, she looked much less spectacular in this race than the other ones. And I would argue happily with Chad that one of the reasons was they didn't use her speed. They throttled her down and let everybody else in the race and gave a horse like Point of Honor, who's a very good horse, made her job easier because she didn't have that much ground to make up. I think she could have been a little more impressive if they had allowed her to open up. Chad doesn't think he's not running her in the Alabama, potentially. See, when he talked to Granick, and I haven't talked to him about it, I read what I read in the papers, as he said, because he's concerned about a 1.25, he just thinks she may want more time and go to the Cotillion. And it's not because he's got Dunbar Road for the Alabama, because he would be happy to run both against. He does it all the time. I mean, from Chad Brown's perspective, and I don't talk to him really about this stuff, but if you're Chad Brown, wouldn't you rather have the first and second choice than just the first choice? Who wouldn't, right? But I think what's best for the horse, he probably wants to give her more time. It's going to change. She ran well. She just didn't. She wasn't electric. She wasn't overly impressive. Was it because she is better going a little shorter? Is it because she sort of allowed the race to, you know, you can't go that slowly up front and just sort of blow it out in the stretch. It's not going to happen with these horses. So it was kind of a little disappointing, but I don't think it was a bad effort. We'll see where she goes from here when she does, but she's done a lot in a very short period of time, right? I think that's
great.
A little lost.
Great.
But on the other hand, when Chad compares her to Go Zapper, he's raising expectations. You know, he is definitely sort of, you know, in a little bit, you could argue he's putting a target on her back. And obviously he says it because he believes it. And you know, I mean, Go Zapper didn't become Go Zapper, you know, his first three starts either. And he was very electric because he made those huge runs from the back of the pack. I don't want to be too hard on her, but, you know, I think we all thought maybe she'd be a little more impressive on Sunday. Point of Honor ran well. I mean, she's a good horse. George did a good job with her. I think the matchup with Point of Honor and Dunbar Road, among others, in the Alabama is sort of interesting, right?
Yeah.
Are they going to point Jaywalk after she won at Delaware in the Alabama?
That's a good question. And we can
mojo back, right?
Yes, very much, very much.
I don't want to knock her on it, but obviously she wasn't. I wouldn't call her scintillating by any stretch, but take a sort of step back. We'll see. I mean, you don't want to ever anoint these horses too early. You know, she's the best horse. She's better than this horse. She's better. Just watch and let them show you. And she, you know, she was not as spectacular as she was in the one turn Acorn. I don't think it's that surprising.
Couple of little notes from Sunday. Leem's Map got his first winner as a sire. Basin. 86 buyer in there. That's going to be a good.
Yeah,
that's a good group.
That was a very good race. That was a very good race. Obviously, you know, it's funny the key race thing came up with the show, and Tom mentioned. I said I had to have 5 minutes to argue or expand on it. But, you know, I think that key race is the most overused, misused thing in racing, and it's a lazy thing in general. Because, you know, you're running maiden races at Saratoga or Del Mar, it's not going to be surprising when two or three horses come out of the race to win. So I think that Basin's race is, you know, the maiden race at
And Churchill has proven to be a very strong race. I mean, the winner coming back and, you know, blowing the field out in Sanford and then basically coming back winning a fast race. So that's probably is. But I think a key race is a race where the participants come back and that generally a large percentage of them improve dramatically in their next start. Winning and improving are two, are not always, you know, necessarily mutually exclusive. But he did run very well. And I thought Jeremiah's horse ran very well. I texted Jeremiah after the race and I said, it's kind of incredible that after your horse has been in two races that he's still a maiden. And you were unusually unlucky to lose this race. Unlucky because he ran to just a really good horse in maidens.
Right.
He would have won a high percentage of the maiden races we run here. And we were texting a little bit about it. And I, you know, and the difference between winning and losing and how you feel about your horse. And I said, you shouldn't feel like you lost, that's for sure. But Mason ran very well. I agree. That was a strong race. No question about it. I'm sure the Connections would love to head to the Hopeful with a chance for redemption against Eddie Keneally's horse.
Well, and on the 2 year old front, last night Al Gold had a nice get together. What a nice win for Al and Maya.
Yeah, what kind of the number did that race get in that stake race?
You
that?
Got the, 75.
No, that was a good race. I think obviously the favorite took a step back, but I think that Jeremiah's horse really took a big step forward. It was nice for Al. Absolutely, yeah. Put a lot of money in the game, so it's really nice to see them having good results. And that was good. I thought Christoph's first time starter. They ran third and they ran extremely well also because he kind of ran up on heels a little bit, you know, into traffic as a firster in that race and still continued on fairly well towards the end. So she ran well too. It was a promising group.
For those that are wondering who the Italian rabbi is, my Italian rabbi, Al Gold, who has some of the best names going, including Fixed Income Larry.
Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos. So
told
forth.
Jeremiah that he lost here today because Jeremiah didn't wear his yarmulke for the race.
Well, actually, there's a very funny story. Have you heard the yarmulke story?
Well, I have a photo of Jeremiah in the yarmulke.
Well, Linda Rice.
Change that to his profile picture.
Well, Linda Rice has an Orthodox hot walker.
Really?
And yes, and Linda is perplexed. She, and in fact, went to Aaron and said, he won't work on Saturdays. I have to fire him.
Aaron Yagoda for the 99.99999% of your audience.
No, they know. When I refer to Aaron, they know who it is. Went to Aaron Yagoda.
And club.
And said, what am I supposed to do? He won't work on Saturdays. it's very funny. And so Aaron talked to him, and he's Orthodox, and he comes out. He's yarmulke laden, and he's out there hot walking and taking care of horses. It's great. But Linda didn't know what to make of it. What do I do? He won't work Saturday. It's pretty good. The actual
story, I gotta tell you, Steve, that story was a little disappointing.
No, it's good. There's more to it. I'll let Aaron.
A little disappointing. I think your listeners were expecting more, but that's just me. I think I'm done here. I think I'm done. I can go have some food with my mom.
Where are you going? Where's your lunch? What's your lunch favorite?
Shea Serling. That's where I'm going for lunch.
Mom's making. She's making.
We went out yesterday. We went. Mom and I went to the local yesterday for lunch.
Oh, okay. I drove by the local yesterday. Yeah,
like the local. Oh, gee, I'm so sorry. You didn't step in.
You could have texted me. You owe me a lunch. We traditionally we've had lunch before the meet starts.
Well, the problem this year was, Steve, I wasn't here for a week and a half with nothing to do.
That's
not
true.
That having lunch to do means I have to have nothing to do, but it is a part of the equation.
It is part of the equation. Not only not something to do, not have a better guest lined up as for lunch either. That's
things
the other
could
part.
Be slow that week. That things could be slow during that week, so I'm able to fit you in.
Well, like what's his name said, in Silence of the Lambs. Hannibal Lecter says.
What's his name setting title? Okay. I think today's visit is right, of course. Have a great time with you.
Not anymore.
Hopefully I'll see you again once more before the meet's up.
I'll see you. You're going to see me Thursday. Are you picking us on Thursday in the third?
Steve, I told you she wants less distance, not more distance.
I understand, but that was
I'm
the race was there.
Nine furlong race. She has no chance. No.
All right.
But hey, I wish you good luck.
Thank you.
But I did pick one of Gary's horses. I did pick one of Gary's horses tomorrow.
Which one?
It doesn't matter. You can look at my picks. They're online.
They're on, okay. Let me
as
see. Hold
Thursdays.
On.
If you want to know how I pick on Thursday, you can look at that too.
Well, you like Clear the Ramp in the second tomorrow. All right. That's
there's
a nice price.
Shot, day shot with
yeah, absolutely.
All right. Can I
thanks
go?
So much. Yes, you can.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Andy Serling, everybody, with another fun visit. And if you're going to be in town Thursday, 8 o'clock at the Parting Glass. And Gary Stevens, Mike Maker, and Stanley Huff, Andy's guests. Let's take a break. We'll come back, check in. Bill Downs, we've connected with Bill, and we'll get him in here, talk a little Indiana. After this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Summer is one of the best times for serious horse players to bet their races. Saratoga and Del Mar are in full swing, along with other top tracks like Gulfstream and Laurel, and ExpressBet puts them all at your fingertips. Plus, ExpressBet customers can play in exclusive tournaments and promotions this summer, and new customers can earn a $500 sign-up bonus. Visit ExpressBet.com today. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Peck on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, about 20 minutes to fill out on this Tuesday. Happy to get Bill Downs in. Talked a couple of weeks ago, and happy to come back and off the Indiana Derby, Oaks, and more weekend 2 weeks ago. A big success. And Bill, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, only 10 nights ago was the Indiana Derby night.
Well, everything we talked about really came to pass, and that included Mr. Money making his way from that difficult post. But, gosh, looking forward to seeing what's next. Seems like Brett Calhoun is going to bring him here to Saratoga and try the heavy heads when it comes to the Travers and Street Band. Larry Jones. I mean, it was really a fun evening. My Lady Curlin also we should bring up, because Brad Cox, clearly there's more upside. You had a very good night of racing, I thought.
Yeah, and it was a record handle night for the third consecutive year, a little
That's
over 4.1 million bet on the card.
Yeah, you mentioned My Lady Curlin. Who was the winner? The Shuby came out of the same race that My Lady Curlin came out of before. So I think that's an up-and-coming race, and I think My Lady Curlin might take on some tougher fillies and mares next time out. But, yeah, Street Band for Larry Jones. Last I heard, they were going to try the Alabama. So that's going to be, yep. You know, I really was impressed with Street Band as much as I was impressed with Mr. Money. And usually at the Indiana Derby, I don't say this, but I thought the top three finishers all are, you know, legit horses where I think they all have their day in the sun, the second and third place horses. Great Magician, who was second in the UAE Derby earlier in the spring, you know, had to deal with the riderless horse quite a bit in the stretch. And also Math Wizard, who was third in the race, who I think is also had it was making a big move, I thought, and really kind of had to be a little bit careful at the top of the stretch and lost momentum. I think all three of those horses are going to be will have their day in the sun, at least the second and third place horse winning some sort of big race.
Well, and you know, I didn't get a chance to have him on the show, but Nacho Correas with the pair of wins as well on the day.
Yeah, you know, he's a guy that just goes under the radar, and it's
you love him.
Yeah, exactly. For a handicapper, you should always be taking a look at his horses because they're, you know, not one say they're completely overlooked, but, you know, generally they don't get as much attention as some of the quote-unquote bigger name trainers.
Now, Viva Vegas won the General, was that the General Assembly? Yeah, that was the General Assembly.
Yeah.
Real Story won the Warriors Veterans, and that drew a nice group. Our friend Marshall had the 10 strike runner in there. Dot Matrix, you know,
yep.
you drew a very eclectic field. What about Pioneer Spirit over Silver Dust? That's a great rivalry that started the stakes action in the Schaefer, and you had a knockdown drag out.
Yeah, that Schaefer stakes for $100,000 is about as good as you could expect a race to come up, and I remember just handicapping the race. I'm like, I don't even know if I can throw one horse in this race. That's how tough it was.
Well, a terrific night. You had the Maiden Turf event as well. I mean, it was all stakes, maiden and allowance races. Really, what you want on a big Oaks Derby card, and it did not disappoint. And you know, now you're midsummer, and go forward for the, you know, really the second half to some degree of the year, Bill. Once you get past Derby Oaks night.
Yeah, well, in essence, I think it almost is the halfway point of our 120-day racing season. So. You were right on there, and you know, last week it was kind of like a week. It was the weather was really, really warm, and it was like an Indiana Derby hangover. And this week, you know, I think the cards. I only have my Tuesday card in front of me, but Wednesday's card is pretty good as well. And there's some good handicapping races over the next couple of afternoons.
Well, and just kind of thumbing through some of the other results, you know, some open company action as well this past week. He takes charge, won that allowance, solid, you know, solid high 70s figure, and haven't really had a chance to see what went on this weekend. I know you had, didn't you have, I did notice while I was in New Jersey when I was down at Monmouth, I saw that you did have a couple of state bred stakes.
Yes, that was, it was early last week. It was, I think Wednesday. We had a $100,000 stakes race on Thursday, and that was won by the favorite She's on the Warpath, where Steve Margolis, Chantel Sutherland, who was aboard, for her other couple of wins, came back up, for this race. I don't remember if Chantel's ever been at Indiana Grand before. But
nice.
Steve Margolis, a quick little story, of course. Steve Margolis, trainer of She's on the Warpath, also the trainer of Asking For It. Asking For It is the horse that fell right at the start at the Indiana Derby. So he had all that angst of watching what happened in the Indiana Derby on a Saturday. And then 5 days later, he comes back up to Indiana Grand. He was there both nights. And he gets the money, $100,000 stakes race with She's on the Warpath. Was won her last three races all on the turf.
And I also, that you talk about the $100,000 stake too, the snack, Ace of Aces for Bernie Flint with John Court, and yep. Wonder She Got Thunder, that in fact had come up with Brad Cox. Just so happens, in that Ellen's Lucky Star, we had talked to him earlier in the day, and the Gradar with Fernando de la Cruz won the other.
And especially Wonder She Got Thunder, I didn't know if she would, you know, if that horse would like the turf, and she did. And she's 2 for 2 lifetime, and she's, you know, granted she's beating up on horses here in the Hoosier State, but obviously that training for Fred has got a big time upside. And Ace of Aces, as you mentioned, he showed an ability to rate last time, and then in the Snack Stakes was able to do it once again and show that he can get a route of ground, which he was normally before that race known as a speedball. And so I think he's starting to develop a new dimension, new running style, has the Ace of Aces, and will be a factor going forward in the Indiana Bred Stakes races.
Now, the action this week and tonight and this afternoon and tomorrow caught my eye with a couple of certainly the allowance tomorrow. There's a very nice mild turf allowance, and you've got some eclectic action, plenty of Indiana bred participation. You've got a 2-year-old Indiana quarter horse event to close the card. You've got maiden turf, running a lot of turf races, maiden turf today as the nominal feature as well. You got some ideas, Bill?
Yeah. What race do you want to go over? There's a turf sprint in the fourth race, an optional claiming race, 5 furlongs on the grass. The 8-5 favorites, the 4-horse Midwest Justice. And I think the key to this race is whether or not Augie, the 7-horse, is able to apply enough pace pressure to the 4 Midwest Justice. Midwest Justice for James Baker, coming off of a career-best speed figure on June 28th, but his dirt record is much better than his turf record, but he looks like he could be the controlling speed. If he's not the controlling speed, a couple to look at. Parade Blue, I thought, came out of a really good race. He won 2 starts back on June 11th from off the pace, and then July 3rd, I thought the race was a much better race, and he went off as the favorite in that race, so he really didn't offer a whole lot of value, in my opinion. He still ran on third, but I think that was a better-than-average race for the classification on July 3rd. And then 4-0 plus for Brett Calhoun, who's been shipping in some horses the last week or two after getting the cash of Mr. Money in the Indiana Derby. A little bit disappointing last time out on dirt, but has some turf wins, likes to come from off the pace, kind of like Parade Blue. So that's a look at some of the contenders in race number 4.
It is an interesting group, and the question with Midwest Justice, we love Jimmy Baker, one of our favorites, but to be honest, this gelding has never really run the kind of races on turf, Bill, that he has run in those two, you know, really strong dirt performances. And so I don't know. I mean, and coming off the dirt, you know, the most recent success on dirt, I don't necessarily know if it doesn't always translate to turf sprinting.
Yeah, the last turf race he ran was a 50 claimer at Churchill. Johnny Obvious, I think, came back to win here at Indiana Grand, if I remember correctly, the winner of the June 7th race. But yeah, you make a great point, Steve. It's just one of those races. You know, let's say if he gets bet down from 8-5, there's a few scratches, but they're all big long shots. So in essence, he's really now a de facto 7-5 favorite as opposed to 8-5 favorite with a couple scratches. But, a low price on him, and you got legitimate other horses in this race. I think it's a race where you attack the favorite and try and beat the favorite, whether you're playing, you know, exactus tries or you're going for the pick 5 or the early pick 4 here at Indiana Grand.
Yeah, I think you got to be a little... defensive with parade shoes, no? The Jeff Metz?
He's a legit horse. Like I said, he went off as a favorite last time. I couldn't believe he got went off as a favorite. It was a really good race, Steve.
July 3rd. And so the fact that he finished third in the race is not a negative for me. And now his price is going to be a bit better. So I take a positive view going into today's race with the sixth parade blue.
All right. What else we like today?
Well, I think that, you know, anytime this time of year you're able to get two-year-old allowance races to fill, I think you should take a look at the race. Because it's always one of the more difficult conditions to fill, especially at Indiana Grand at this time of year. And we usually get to do it a couple times. And today's the day, the fifth race, entry-level allowance race going six furlongs. I got a field of seven, six betting interests. The favorites, Whistling Dixie, improved quite a bit, had a much better start in career start number two than she had in her debut. And she just ran away from a field of allowance horses. But obviously, this is a much more difficult race. Monedas de Oro, part of the Gennaro Garcia entry, went up against the boys the last couple times out. She was right there to the end in an entry-level allowance race against the boys on July 3rd, now back in versus Phillies. And the one I like a whole lot is the two-horse Bet Your Bankroll for George Leonard III. One from off the face, but she really kicked it into high gear in the last 16th of a mile, and I think that she's got some upside. She didn't cost a whole lot of money, only $16,000. She's already won over that, and Bet Your Bankroll, I think, is as long as you can get some sort of trip. I always hate the inside post if you're not, you know, showing lots of early speed. But she has tactical speed, but I think she has something to say about the outcome as well. Bet Your Bankroll the two in race number five.
Well, that's part of the early action. The fourth goes at 3:39, and the fifth at 4:07. I know you said you had mostly the Wednesday, but Tuesday, but tomorrow, Bill, it's pretty irresistible to at least, you know, get a glance at that group that came together full field in the eighth tomorrow. The feature's terrific.
Yeah, tell me about it. I got it out here right now. Here we go. The eighth race, entry-level allowance race, one other than going a mile on the turf. You know, Shared Value, I thought, came out of a pretty good race. The early pace in that race, I don't think, was that fast on July the 9th. And Shared Value is coming off a bit of a layoff. I think Shared Value, he's a definite contender. Another one I liked a little bit was the horse coming off the Churchill win. The four Split the Wickets, winner of a maiden claiming race at Churchill off a short layoff. Improved quite a bit last time out for Tom Van Berg. Those are probably the two I like the most tomorrow. In that eighth race. I don't know who you like, Steve.
And I just, it just, you know, caught my eye when I saw the, you know, some of the names involved. And, I, you know, you hit the highlights, obviously. You know, Amos California Swing with my man Miguel Mena. You've got, you know, some very nice types in here that project. Sakonette, you know, coming from last year, I remember, you know, went into that Mystic Lake Derby, and obviously something went wrong for Tony Granitz. Came back and you know, ran kind of evenly at Arlington. You know, ships down here from Chicago, assuming that he's coming. That was a horse that was really, you know, knocking on the door of being a serious horse last year, Bill.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned the trainer angle, and this is a race. This is a race on a Wednesday at Indiana Grand, the eighth race, and you got Amos, you got Maker, you got Tony Granitz, you got Peter Miller, who's got the 12-horse Hartel, who's going to have to descend from the outside and try and get position, who was second in a stakes race going a mile last year at Del Mar as a two-year-old. So that just shows you. I always tell people, I said, those names, yeah, we run lots of Indiana breds, but there's plenty of names that you'll see, even the Indiana bred races, that you, a horse player handicapper is going to know just from being a follower of horse racing. And, in the eighth race tomorrow is one of those examples.
Well, and you mentioned Peter Miller. Hartel is going to have to work out a trip from the 12-hole with Rodney Prescott. And, you know, he's shown a couple of, in a couple of different times that he's a little, you know, tactical, and he may have to be. It feels like, you know, there's not a lot of time to get over going a mile, right, Bill?
No.
From the gate to the turn?
Yeah, it's kind of like the middle of the three turf routes that we have. We got 7.5 furlongs. We got a mile and a 16. Mile 16 kind of starts up at the top of the stretch. That ought to give you an idea. It's like, it's kind of like mid-stretch, I would say. There's a little bit of time, but, you know, if you get stuck out wide, you know, we do it, you have tight turns on this turf course, and so that's where you get into some issues.
Now, there's some prices to entertain in here, too. You mentioned the Maker Horse that broke the maiden the last time over the course. Jumped forward from a fig standpoint, 8-1 on Evil Eye, Angel Rodriguez, and there's nothing wrong with that one, the Magician colt. How about, I'll give you a price here, actually, to look at. That was a decent performance by Hold On Angel. Went to the turf, this for John Horan and Marcelino Pedroza rides. That's a competitive performance from Hold On Angel in a starter allowance. You know, usually that means he's facing off against, you know, multiple type winners and hard hitters. 15-1. I think Hold On Angel might want to use at least in your exotics. It would be a big price boost.
Yeah, that's what I would think would be my recommendation with Hold On Angel. Comes down to the same race as Shared Value. Shared Value was the first horse that I mentioned talking about that race. And Frogman Mel and Bourbon and Lime in that race basically went 1-2 around the racetrack. That's why I did like Shared Value a bit more than Hold On Angel, even though they were only about a length or three parts of a length apart at the finish, is because Shared Value came from a bit farther back in a race. I didn't think there was a whole lot of early pace, but you know, Hold On Angel, if the if he can complete an exotic or a trifecta or something like that, that would certainly make the make it worth your while.
Frogman Mel, a bit of a favorite going back a little bit. Frogman Mel spent time on the East Coast. Kind of a favorite of mine. And my buddy Phil Melnick, whose nickname is Mel, and so he was always looking for Frogman Mel. I gotta tell him that he can find him out there at Indiana Grand. Well, nice cards the next couple of days. This afternoon, 2:15 Eastern, they kick off, and a couple of ideas there from Bill, and you can hear him call, and you've got Rachel and the team that'll take you through the race card tomorrow. A really nice allowance as the feature. Bill, great to catch up, and we'll keep plowing through the summer. We'll talk in a couple of weeks.
All right, Steve, thank you.
Bill Downs, you can follow Bill on Twitter, Bill Downs 1. And like I said, the Indiana, you know, we talked, we didn't get to Larry Jones, and maybe Larry wins tomorrow. Maybe he wins the honorable miss, and it gives me a chance to combine two conversations with him. You know, both the street band story and Hours to Run, perhaps. But have to beat. Mia Mischief and others tomorrow in the honorable miss. We didn't get much of a chance to. Andy and I went off in a million directions, so we really didn't get a chance to go through the card tomorrow with him. I'm going to continue to work on it. Nice action when we get back to racing here at Saratoga tomorrow. Meanwhile, let's take a quick look at what you've got here on the Tuesday. You obviously, we talked about Indiana and Presque Isle, but the feature at Fort Erie, you got the second leg of the Canadian Triple Crown later. About, you know, start to tune in at about 7:30. Goes off at 7:36. Parks today as well. Louisiana Downs and Mountaineer. Finger Lakes. Thistle Down. Fairmount. There's your lineup. And I should be saying Parks. Yeah, Tony. How about Tony yesterday riding the Smarty Jones Firster that he bred, and didn't look good. She kind of chased the pace and slowly backed out of it, and Tony kind of just gave her an education and wrapped up on her. So we'll look for the next time. what was it, Smarty Sox yesterday. And there's that other horse that he says early in August. He's got Collegeville, but I know he had another two-year-old. It was pretty funny yesterday. I was kind of hoping we'd have a win to talk about. Tony will join us on Thursday. Sean Clancy tomorrow. Seth Merrow. Sid Fernando. And more. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Safe trips for all. We'll see if we've got a dual Canadian Classic winner later tonight. And then we'll find out if Baltus is headed back to Woodbine for the Breeders and a potential Triple Crown try. That's what they're aiming for. They're looking to sweep. Enjoy it, and we'll talk to you in the morning. Thanks to Joe as well. Good luck today.
Go killing all the bees.